Chapter 35. Carter. Whether this moment was orchestrated by my subconscious, a loving God with a sense of humor, or straight-up dumb luck, I don't care. All I know is that my heart is pounding hard enough to make my vision blur around the edges as I lead Emma to a door. She looks different tonight. Not just the hair and the clothes, although I love the way the bangs frame her face and make her eyes look bigger, and the way she actually seems to be comfortable out in public. It's as if she's standing taller, or maybe looser. I can't put my finger on it, and at the moment I don't care because she's still my Emma under it all. Her cough of laughter as we pass the employees only sign eases a little of my tension and brings a smile to my lips.
Please don't tell me you have a $200,000 painting leaning against the wall in an employee break room.
Her voice is a rough whisper, but I can hear the smile in it. Not exactly. We walk down a short hall to the reception area outside Mr. Leonard's office. Longing for Freedom is partially covered in sheeting and leaning against the wall behind his assistant's desk. With great reluctance, I let go of her hand and move about, turning on lights and adjusting the protective cloths so we can see the painting. So I just put on the smart glasses and look at the painting? She nods and clasps her hands tightly.
Once it recognizes what you're looking at, it will give you the option to hear about the painting.
Unfortunately, I'm holding both pairs of glasses, the one she gave me and the one I received to test the tour guide system. I don't suppose you know which is which, do you? Her eyes widen as she, too, looks at the pairs in my hands.
Ah.
Never mind. I'll figure it out. I slide one pair onto my face and wait for the system to walk me briefly through the usage instructions before signaling that it's ready to work. My breath freezes in my lungs as I turn to the painting. I've no reason to think there will be anything bad on this recording. If she hated me now, she wouldn't have come back here with me or made me a special pair of glasses. Small graphics in the edge of my vision offer me options to learn about the history or style of the painting or learn about the artist. If these are the special glasses, she'll have put the information in the artist section, right? I follow the instructions to select that option and wave a hand at that icon. A voice seems to echo straight into my head from the earpieces of the glasses. It shares my official biography, and my more famous works seem to appear on the wall beside Longing for Freedom. The experience is both interesting and a little disconcerting. And not the one I'm looking for. I take the glasses off, blinking rapidly as my brain adjusts to no longer seeing the other paintings. It's not these. I wiggle them in the air as I give Emma a nervous smile.
Okay.
Her breathy voice and pale face mean she's just as nervous as I am. I don't have to do this. I offer her the second pair of glasses. You can have them back if you'd rather I didn't. She shakes her head.
No, I want... You should see it. It's my painting for you, if you want to think of it that way.
Her head jerks to a point over her shoulder that is probably meant to indicate the portrait hanging in the museum, but really aims at the parking lot. All right, then. I take a deep breath and slide the glasses on, but I keep looking at her as the system goes through the opening process. The way she's standing 3 feet away, trembling is about to kill me. I extend my hand and she takes it immediately, sending a thrill through me that is both exciting and calming. My girl of contradictions. No matter what, I say, you and I start over tonight. Her nose scrunches up as her face tilts up to mine.
That means we had an end instead of a bump in the road. Maybe we continue tonight?
Even better. I lean down and drop a kiss on her nose before twining our fingers together as I turn to the painting. Instead of three options this time, there's only one, and it simply reads, play. I click the button on the side of the frame. The voice in my head this time is hers, and it nearly brings me to my knees.
Before I met you, I didn't realize that I'd locked myself in a prison. I thought I'd structured a life that miraculously let me live in all the available worlds.
A few pictures of her dance around me. Her in a college sweatshirt, in an evening gown, in a church t-shirt on some sort of mission trip, in a linen pantsuit in front of a Christmas tree.
Everyone was happy with these pieces of me, and that made me happy. Then you came along, and somehow you saw them all. You saw that I was a puzzle that hadn't quite been put together yet.
My sketches seemed to cover the wall now. When had she even taken pictures of those?
You made me see that I had locked myself away, limited myself by putting life into closely guarded buckets. You didn't seem to care which puzzle piece you got. You wanted to spend time with them all. That was both wonderful and terrifying.
I have to blink to clear away the tears in my eyes so I can see the pictures of us she's included in the display.
I have a lot to learn now. It's a long journey out of a prison of my own making. But you've opened the door and I'm taking that first step.
For a moment, I think everything digital is cleared, and then I realize she's edited my painting. The cell door isn't closed anymore. It's open. Tears spill over and roll down my face. Thank you, God, that I am watching this in private.
If this is it for us, I'll always be thankful for that. I hope, though, that maybe it isn't the end. You said I was full of contradictions, and maybe this is simply one of those where we start a happy relationship from a place of sadness.
Her voice fades away, and slowly the painting returns to the original. I turn to her, trying to hug her to me, but she's still standing sideways, facing the painting as if she were watching with me. And we end up in some sort of weird standing tackle. We both laugh as she turns to me and wraps her arms around my middle. I know she doesn't need my answer. It's hanging in the museum as we speak, so I lift my hands to cup either side of her jaw, my fingers extending along her cheeks and bend to kiss her. Before my lips can touch hers, though, my wrist starts to vibrate and emit the most horrible, tinny tune imaginable. I close my eyes in a groan of agony as I let my forehead rest against hers. It's a shaky perch as she's suddenly laughing and it's only growing in violence.
What is that?
She asks through the laughter. I pull away from her and straighten my arm to lift the sleeve from my wrist before pulling it back in between us to show her my new watch. The bright face sends an eerie green and blue glow onto our faces. I thought I'd turned off the alarms, but apparently I just keep making new ones because it keeps doing this.
You got a smartwatch?
Her hands trail over my wrist as she does something that makes the device stop stabbing our ears. I sigh. Yes, seemed like the thing to do if I'm going to date a technology nerd. Her smile is wide as she carefully removes the watch from my wrist.
This technology nerd doesn't need you to change any more than you need her to.
She lifts her own wrist to show off her watch, glowing softly with its sedate shades of gray.
I can tell you what time it is.
Oh? My smile returns, and I rest my hands on her shoulders. And what time is it?
Time to kiss me, of course.
I most emphatically, perhaps almost too emphatically, agree. Several moments later, we're once again standing there staring into each other's eyes.
I really need to get back,
she says with a sigh. I grin. You mean you're going to drag me to an event at an art museum? Her shrug is cute as a light pink washes over her cheeks.
I guess I am. It's not so bad when you know how to appreciate it.
She steps back and thrusts one foot forward to show me her white dress sneakers.
And when you have comfortable footwear.
I flick a finger across the new strands of hair decorating her forehead. I can't wait to hear how this came about.
It's all part of my discovery of the new me.
Sounds like a journey I can't wait to take. I drape my arm around her shoulder as we walk quietly back to the gallery. My fingers can't seem to stop sliding across the soft fabric of her sleeve. What is this material?
Bamboo.
She all but shouts at me before going into detail about the podcast she listened to that described how they turn the hollow tree into fibers for clothing, sheets, and more. My smile is wide enough to hurt my cheeks as we get to the door that will take us back to the party. She pulls me to a stop before I open the door, though, and her face is serious. It doesn't make my smile fade, though. If it could, it would get bigger. I'm confident we're not about to go backward, and we've simply encountered the next curve on a journey forward. Life with Emma is never going to be boring. What is it? I ask.
You have to recuse yourself from the tour guide system selection.
I frown. She has a really good system now. I especially like the potential it has to show how an artist's work changes over time or links together. Why?
Because having a girlfriend in the running really presents a conflict of interest.
My wide smile returns. That it does. And I open the door to a room full of art and technology, friends and family, and a bright and happy future.
Acknowledgements. When I started pursuing publication back in 2011, I one day wanted to be writing both contemporary and Regency novels. For far longer than I anticipated, it wasn't something I could manage. To see pixels and paint become a reality is definitely a dream come true. I couldn't have managed it without my family. To Jacob, who always patiently listens when I say my book is horrible during rewrites, thank you for pushing me to keep going. To all my blessings, but for this book, particularly Blessing One, your strength and ability to embrace yourself as you are, despite the difficulties that brings, is an inspiration. To my Voxer girls, who read excerpts and discussed edits and brainstormed plot twists, you are the best support team a writer could ask for. To Angie, for helping me define my character's styles, to Rebecca, for being the type of fan authors dream of finding, and to both of you for showing me how artists actually draw, thank you. To the rest of our life group, it's an honor to do life together. To my readers and Instagram followers who pitched in with their knowledge on oil painting, grant distribution, and the struggles of being single, I'm forever in your debt. My deepest apologies for doing a terrible job at keeping a record of your name so I could thank you all individually. A huge and likely never-to-be-seen thank you to the artists who put tutorials up on YouTube, particularly Andrew Tischler. Thanks for teaching me how Carter would paint. About the author. Christie is the award-winning author of romance novels from a Christian worldview. Her books include The Hawthorne House, Haven Manor, and Hearts on the Heath series, set in the Regency era, as well as the contemporary rom-com Pixels and Paint. She is also a speaker, teaching classes in writing as well as biblical and spiritual topics. She has spoken to writers' groups, schools, and young women's church groups. When she is not writing or interacting with her readers, Christie spends time with her family and her church. A graduate of Georgia Tech with a computer science degree, she knows that life rarely takes the turns we expect. While she still spends hours a day on a computer, now she's living out the dreams of her childhood and creating stories for others to enjoy and be inspired by. Learn more at ChristieAnneHunter.com or by finding Christie on Instagram at ChristieAnneHunter.
You've been listening to Pixels and Paint by ChristieAnneHunter and read by Julie Rogers and Christopher Ragland. Published by Oholiab Creations, LLC. Text copyright 2023 Christy Hunter. Production copyright 2023 Christy Hunter. No portion of this audiobook may be reproduced without prior written permission by the author. For more information and great titles by Christy Ann Hunter, please visit www.christyannhunter.com. This audiobook was recorded and produced by Monkey Nut Audiobooks in Hampshire, UK. And I'll give that all to you again.